My father used to just tell me, just take the risks. Like, don't stand on the sideline, take the risk and you'll figure it out. And if you don't figure it out, ask questions of people who could help you figure it out. But if you stay on the sideline, you're never going to advance.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the pleasure of hosting Mary Beth Blair, Director and Associate GC of Legal Operations and Procurement at Coursera. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Well, I want to start with just a little bit of background, how you know, started your career and you know, the things you've been doing recently in the last few companies, but definitely curious also about the combination of legal and procurement when you get the chance. But first, how did you get to do what you're doing today?
So I started my in-house career at Panera Bread. So started there, actually, I began as in-house counsel, focused primarily on contracts. That morphed into taking on the role of legal operations director. So I served the dual role there as legal operations director and corporate counsel. Then moved on to United Natural Foods and was solely their director of legal operations. So I set up the function there. They did not have the function at the time, set that up. And then came to Coursera a few years ago and was fortunate to have the opportunity to again get back into that dual role of being counsel for the company and the legal operations director, so setting up the function at Coursera as well. So it's an interesting mix because, again, you do the legal operations. And when you think about procurement, what procurement really is for us, it is I manage the team of attorneys that handle the procurement contracts for Coursera.
It's actually interesting, and would love to double click on this for a second, because I haven't seen as many situations, and I had the pleasure of interviewing and talking to many folks in legal and procurement, in IT and in different departments. And many times, or most of the times, the crossovers either happened fully or never happened. You know, the crossover between, in your case, the, you know, being a inside counsel and move to operations. But keeping both jobs, I think is pretty rare. Is that true? Am I seeing it correctly?
You know, I go to some conferences and I do run into people who wearing both hats. I think for me, the way it happened was when I got into legal ops, people were still trying to figure out what legal ops was. And I think my GC at the time saw the future and said, I really want to start focusing on this, but also had a budgetary constraint. And so he thought, you know, Mary Beth probably has the skill set to do the operation side. So let me see if we can do both roles. And that's how I got into it. And then having the opportunity to just focus solely on it, which is great. And I think, you know, depending on the maturity of your organization and depending on the needs of your organization and the size, it's great to have that sole legal operations director. But sometimes, you know, smart GCs know how to build teams that can stretch across and benefit the organization in multiple areas. So it's good. I love being a lawyer too, so I get to do both.
So you mentioned that, you know, when you started, it wasn't really defined. It wasn't really clear. Is it better or is it still not fully defined and not fully clear?
The story I always tell people is when my GC at the time approached me about, did I want to take on the legal operations role? I had to sort of shake my head and say, yes, I'd like to think about it, and then go run and research a job description as to what that meant before I committed to it. It's definitely, you know, here we are 10 years in, it's definitely changed. You know, when I'm out meeting with other colleagues in the legal ops space, much more defined. People, you know, back then, I think people saw it. Oftentimes it was sort of ancillary to legal. It was maybe a glorified administrator type of role. Now I think there's just much more common to see it in organizations of all sizes too, not just big organizations.
So you also build those for the ground up multiple times now. Maybe let's talk about this for a second. So maybe first, actually, right, the spectrum of this is more of an ancillary to this is a core, you know, function within it. My assumption is you're seeing it more as the core function. And from your experience, you know, when you come in and you build this new function, where do you start?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to take the approach of the expectation of legal operations now is that the legal department needs to run like a business, or you could phrase it, it needs to run like the rest of the business. And so you have to, coming in, you have to sort of do an assessment of what's the foundations that's expected of you. Where is the department in relation to its financial acumen? Are they aware of what's required for a budget? Are they aware of forecasting and planning and accruals? Or is that just something that they rely heavily on their finance partners to do? So I go through, you know, it's kind of funny. The Corporate Legal Operations Consortium has the clock 12, and it's sort of the 12 foundations of legal operations. And I sort of go through those and say, okay, where is the department on each of those? Most like when you're building out the function, you might find that some of those are already there. They just don't call it that, right? So you sort of take the temperature on knowledge management and do you have a technology roadmap? So I go through that, but you also really need to come in and understand the priorities of the company, but also the priorities of your general counsel. Like, what does he or she want to accomplish, you know, 12 months, 24, 36 months, and where is the department in relation to that, and how are you going to get them there?
Another thing I want to connect to, which is actually pretty much repeating itself as far as I can tell between different departments, whether it be legal, finance, and even IT, funny enough, where on one hand, you need to run like the rest of the business. I'm kind of repeating what you said, but I think there's a nuance there that is important. You want to be running like the rest of the business. You want to align on the best practices of everyone else. You want to report the same way. You want to manage budgets the same way and move together at the same speed. But at the same time, you want to run like a business yourself. And so with your own inspirations and as a department, your own inspirations, your own roadmap, and really push the envelope a little bit. And I think what I found inspiring is, you know, and we've been doing this podcast for several years now, and even within those several years, you can see the shift in the appetite that department has that are not traditionally departments that sort of like leading change and innovation, whether again, it's in technology or in methodology or way of running a business, to a point that they actually are, in some cases, you know, pushing the envelope and saying like, we actually want to do this thing better. And then the rest of the organization might say, oh, that is actually very cool. This is actually very useful. Can we copy this? Do you feel that this is something that operation teams needs to aspire to? Do you feel like this is something that, is that resonating?
It depends on the organization you're in. I'm fortunate that where I am now, I feel like we're a very innovative company. And again, I have a general counsel who is encouraging of that as well. And it's encouraging us to innovate and try things. And you have that, it's a little cliche, but you have that permission to fail, right? So if the rest of the company is trying out AI in different areas, well, okay, legal, you should get on board and try it too and see how you can make it work for you. And so I think some of that's just going to depend on the appetite of where your company's at. But I definitely think, you know, take the temperature of what everybody else is doing and probably you'll find that there's opportunity for you to sort of change and grow along with the rest of the organization.
And I think AI, you mentioned AI, but I think that's part of kind of like, it's a good example where it, you know, might be greenfield. And the question is who's making the first move. And I think this is an area where finance and legal, I must say, just surprised me in their appetite to try it. again, traditionally was not the case. And so, you know, at least from my point of view, I find it interesting.
You know, it's funny because when you think about machine learned AI, that had a huge impact for legal a long time ago, right? Like if you think about e-billing and things like that, there was a case of AI made a difference, right? It has, I can remember what it was like before e-billing platforms, right? And I always say passing the paper down the hallway and forget the cost savings that we probably see from that technology, but just the time saving you see. So I think it, when generative AI first became the big, you know, buzzwords in the last year and a half or so, there was this, don't know about that. But that was probably very similar to what we had with machine learning. And granted, it's a very different, it's a different animal, but you have to sort of take a step back and think, you know what, there's a way to approach this and you don't want to be sitting on the sidelines while everybody else is playing around with AI, only to find out later that you're just five steps behind because you were too timid to get in and try it. Because I think it's getting safer and safer every day to play around with some of these tools.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at Tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
This is great. So if I take this, for example, and say I'm listening to this conversation and maybe I just got the opportunity to build a legal operation team or any operation team, or maybe join to scale an operation team, you know, maybe there's a one or two people already and I'm being assigned to scaling it. What is the, and I come for you for advice, like what are the couple of things that you would direct me, right? So we mentioned the 12 things, the assessment from Clock and, you know, kind of taking the pulse of the business. What makes it work well or fail if you would take a step back?
Oh, for legal operations to work well or fail?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing is don't take on everything at once. There might be 12 fundamentals there. Don't take them on. Find out where the real quick wins are going to be, where you're going to see a benefit. And the biggest benefit is that people are going to buy into legal operations because, believe it or not, I still think at this point, when you're the first legal operations person in your organization, there's still a lot of confusion as to what you do or what benefit you're going to bring. So that's number one to me. But look for areas where you can make change quickly too. Like, are there things like automation? You probably, a lot of companies have CLM tools and things like that. Can you make life easier for the business and for legal by leveraging your existing tech stack, like finding opportunities in there to process, improve, to cut time, to automate, all those things? I feel like you just really need to build the foundations of a lot of things. It's been said over and over and over again, but it is so true. Like, you have to know what your current situation is before you go out and do anything else. So in that first 90 days of standing something up, yes, check your team against whatever your operations plan is. For me, I'm in legal operations. So yeah, I go by those fundamentals, but whatever your fundamentals are, check against that. But really know what's going on internally, because you can't make change without knowing that. And if you start to make change and then you're just floundering all over the place, people are going to start to, they're just not going to buy what you're trying to sell.
Because the buy-in is critical, right? So I think the biggest thing is that you make those plans, you can whiteboard, you can have a roadmap, but at the end of the day, the people need to adopt it.
Yeah. And everybody's had those adoptions that have failed. And that's the other thing I would tell people is reach out to like colleagues that are in your field or vendors that are in your field, like leverage your vendors too, because they know what their other customers are doing and they can help you with a whole host of problems. Like, cause I'm a team of really one in legal operations, right? So I rely a lot on external people to kind of help me help me benchmark. So go out and talk to those people. Cause like I said, we've all failed. And so leverage other people's failures to figure out what they did wrong to not have it happen to you.
Yeah. Make those learnings. when you think about the crossover between, again, being an inside counsel or working for a GC or being a GC and having, you know, building that legal operation function, right? A lot of times, if this is comparable for other departments, if folks, you know, listening doesn't fully know what a GC does versus an operation person, that relationship though exists in any other department. How do you manage that relationship to sort of like the two halves of that problem? Because again, just like the buying point, you need the leader of the group to be behind that, the initiatives.
I look at myself, I don't have this title, but I try to envision myself as the chief of staff for my GC, right? What are his objectives that he wants the team to achieve, which ultimately are the objectives of, you know, supporting the objectives of the company? So I need to make sure that we're aligned. And it's like, you have to meet a lot, especially if you're in a remote environment, like you really need to make sure you're setting aside time, meeting, understanding his point of view, and not getting bogged down in the day-to-day details of, okay, we need to do this, we need to buy this, we need to do that. Like, what's the big picture? What's the strategy? What are we aiming towards? And again, I think it's building that trust. It's building that buy-in that you are going to do what you say you're going to do. Because, any GC is going to look at you and say, I hired you to basically be the chief operating officer of this team. So how are we operating? Like, tell me what's good. Tell me what's bad and be honest about it, because nothing's going to run perfectly. And I think a lot of it is that you have to sometimes have hard conversations, and hard conversations sometimes have to be had with you too. So for me, I think a lot of positions, relationship building is huge, and you have to have a very candid and very lockstep relationship with the general counsel. Even if I'm just as in-house counsel, as the associate general counsel, you still have to have that kind of mindset too.
And I do actually want to double click on that sentiment that a lot of times people, I feel, especially when something that is new, not defined, they're the first one defining a role within that organization or bringing, you know, a role for that organization, has a tendency to, you know, focus on what are the improvements, what are the new positive things that can be done without necessarily, like, you know, causing any fires or any discomfort. But I think you kind of nailed it right there where you talked about the hard conversations, because at the end of the day, it's not a good idea to try and to say automate bad process. It's not a good idea to try and to wrap this functioning team or sometimes even individuals with a process to try and mitigate the fact that, you know, something doesn't work. So it is interesting, you know.
And I will tell you, Mike, when I think back on the failures that I've had in legal operations, it's because I haven't wanted to be the difficult person in the room. I was one of those people that was born naturally, you know, maybe I'm a born people pleaser by nature. And so it's taken me a long time in my career to get to the point to say, you know, you don't have to be rash about it or, you know, rude, but you sometimes have to have, and not just with the general counsel, but you have to have difficult conversations with your peers and other people on the team to say, I understand this is difficult, but this has to happen. And especially when you're a team of one, I think sometimes that's a tough place to be in. But so yeah, you have to learn to know there's a time and place to have those difficult conversations, because a lot of it is just change management, and no one likes to change. None of us, we're just, as humans, we're not inclined to want to change, but you have to be the leader. You have to kind of lead people through the change, and that can be difficult.
Yeah, and it does almost always, you know, going to piss someone off, right? It's always gone.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, there's going to be, someone's life is disrupted and somebody likes how they do things because it works for them. And I get it. I can be like that too. But as part of, I think a huge part of being in operations in anything, whether it's legal or otherwise, is you're supposed to be optimizing things, right? I mean, isn't that all about operations? Isn't about just doing it repeatedly, you're always trying to fine tune it and make sure that you're better. And that means that something is going to change along the way.
And, you know, funny, when we think about, if we kind of circle back that point to the AI or even the technology before that, I think something about leading the change is also educating the people involved that the progress that would come out of it and the improvement for them personally. So many people are essentially the known concept of, we always done it that way. So now you change it. There's a part of it that people also feel like you're taking something away from them that they don't know if they're going to get back. And that can be, you know, importance, feeling important, impact, or feeling like you're making an impact. And all of a sudden you're taking that task away. And now you're asking me to fill it with something, quote unquote, more strategic. And people have fear around that.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's what we hear a lot with AI now, especially in legal. It's, we're going to free up time for lawyers to be more strategic. And yeah, it's like, what does that mean? Right. Because I think we're all used to doing day to day, you know, I redlined the contract or whatever. We have actually done strategy sessions for our legal leadership team. Like, this is what it means to be strategic. This is what it means to build a strategy and how to think strategically. We've actually, you know, I've been in more than one organization where we've brought in a consultant to help with that, because I don't know. I think people that reach the level of GC, yeah, they're probably pretty good at the strategic thinkers. But even as you get down into the AGC level, like, I still sometimes I struggle with that because I have so much blocking and tackling and day-to-day stuff to do that you don't. So you have to almost add that component in to help lawyers become strategic thinkers, because I do think you're absolutely right. I think there's a gap there a lot of times for, you know, and again, I hate to generalize and I am a lawyer and I don't want to speak critically of us, but you know, there's certain things that we're really good at and not every, I think actually taking a step back, I think strategy and being strategic is tough for a lot of people, even seasoned business people. It's like a muscle that you keep having to work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, I was about to say, actually, this is not a lawyer thing. Right. You know, engineers and marketing people and salespeople, doesn't matter the function. I think you're right. I think the majority of people are used to and find comfort in doing the tactical work because it is easier to understand and master. It is more in the known universe versus, you know, strategic work is a lot of times in the unknown universe. You're trying to come up with a strategy. You're trying to come up with things. And I think it's an interesting tension because I think history tells you that as time passes, that is the momentum of societies to move further and further away from tactical,
right?
You know,
to look more where we are today, right?
Yeah.
And there's something feel good about tactical, right? It's that checking off the list of, I accomplished this, 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 and this. And to your point, strategy is a lot of unknown, and sometimes strategies fail. And so you're sitting over here and you're like, is this the right strategy? I think it's the right strategy. And how do I pivot when we need to pivot? And that is just another area of complexity, I think, that it's a struggle for the mind, knowing that I'm going to set this 3-year strategy, but I might have to pivot after a year. And then I think a lot of people just struggle with that.
Absolutely. You know, not to get too, you know, up there, but it is interesting to see, to look back to, you know, education systems and how we look at, you know, younger kids and next generation of what it is that you trained them on or put them through. And it's not enough of that strategic stuff. And, you know, it's interesting to me where, and obviously this is what I spend my days working on, but really sort of like it's fascinating to me, the shift that comes from it, the potential that it brings, I think, to society as a whole and the individual specifically, but the struggle that comes with it and how much we need to kind of like unpack. And this is why a lot of times I'm very interested in how do you start an operation team within an existing department? Because in many ways, that's what you're doing. You're sort of like forcing, you create a forcing function that is supposed to think strategically about how we do things, but then trying to like break down the tactical work that is currently being done and trying to retrofit it and fit it back to, you know, a new strategy?
I think a lot of it's there, though. I think a lot of it's actually being done. And it's just kind of you need to create that picture for people, right? What are we trying to achieve? And give them that visual. And then kind of, you know, you work in all your exercise, you do your SWOT analysis, you do all that stuff that maybe you haven't done. All the pieces are probably there. It's putting it together. And like I said, really helping people tune into what's that objective that you're going for. Because I think more of it's there than people realize is there. All those little tactical pieces are there, but even those need to be kind of fit into the right slots.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this is a great point. And I think you've seen, you know, several of those situations through your career. I always like to ask, is there any advice you received earlier in your career where you feel like this is worth paying forward and can help people like it helped you earlier?
You know, it's funny. The best career advice I ever received was from my dad. And my dad was not a lawyer. My dad was a self-employed electrician. But when I was first getting, in the law, I had like most young lawyers, I had my self-esteem issues. And my father used to just tell me, just take the risks. Like, don't stand on the sideline, take the risk. And you'll figure it out. And if you don't figure it out, ask questions of people who could help you figure it out. But if you stay on the sideline, you're never going to advance. It seems like pretty generic advice, but I think, again, it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about. Like, change is difficult. People want to stay in that comfort zone. So get out of your comfort zone, because you might fail, sure, but you're not going to know if you don't get out there.
Absolutely. Well, Mary Beth, this was a pleasure, and I think a lot of very, very practical thoughts and tips. So I really appreciate that. And thank you for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a great conversation.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned in today's episode at tonkin.com/MBOpod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on all things business operations, join the Tonkin community at tonkin.com/community.